station. 520 on a Wednesday. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, pound 550 on your AT&T phone. Just put a post on my Facebook page and just make an invite to you as well, since it's Wednesday, 1 week from today. Listener lunch. Wiedemann's Fine Beer and Brew Pub. St. Bernard's where we're going to be. Great spot. We've been there before. It's a real nice spot. So I hope you can join us. Again, Wiedemann's Brew Pub, 1 week from today. Typical meet time, 11:30. You can show up a little earlier or a little later. It's entirely up to you. It's all about fellowship and getting out of the house and enjoying some time out. The infrastructure bill, we're learning more and more about it. Lots of the use of the word equity in there, I think I heard 40-some-odd times or something. Equity, yeah, there's that word. Also, the bill deals with gender identity, which you can call me and tell me what in the hell that's got to do with infrastructure. Does a bridge have a gender identity, Joe? Didn't think so. Maybe in German, because they're der, die, das, you know, masculine, feminine, neuter. But in the English language, we don't assign genders to, nouns. Anyhow, privacy may be an issue for this. And you can see this coming a mile away. We've talked about this before. And, yes, it's made it into legislation. And the word volunteer is in there. But it's only for the time being will this be voluntary. What am I talking about? Climate change. That in the name of fighting climate change, this is what it's predicated on. Now, they're going to cloak it, even though it says climate change, they're going to cloak it in infrastructure, and we need to figure out a way to supplement the highway fund because, well, the gas tax just doesn't cut it anymore. We've become far too fuel efficient, and there's too many electric vehicles on the road that 19 cents and a little more per mile or per gallon does not cover it. So we need to figure out another way of collecting money to keep our roads going. And, of course, fighting climate change. How are they going to do that? Tracking you. They point out at first it's a strictly voluntary basis. The Secretary of Transportation would track participants from all 50 states, as well as D.C. and Puerto Rico, using a variety of different methods to record vehicle miles. Legislation, the infrastructure legislation, it says then this during this study program, this, quote, voluntary period, they would annually establish a per-mile fee after studying the data. Per-mile user fee for passenger motor vehicles, light trucks, and medium and heavy-duty trucks. The amount of charge could vary depending on vehicle type, weight classes as well, to reflect estimated impact on infrastructure. Ready? Quote, to reflect estimated impacts on infrastructure, safety, congestion. Here it is. The environment or other related social impacts. Wow. Other related social impacts. What the hell is that? Is someone going to make an argument that a highway is racist because it goes through a neighborhood of color or something? I've heard that one already. Chicken egg theory on that? I don't know, but the bottom line is environment. So you can see how this is setting itself up already. What kind of car do you have? Is it one of those uber fuel efficient cars? And if so, then we're going to charge you some, you know, penny per mile or maybe more, maybe less, some fraction of a penny. I don't know what it's ultimately going to be. It's going to be something outrageous at some future date. But if you've got one of those evil gasoline fueled cars, in the name of protecting the environment, and it has nothing to do with how much destruction you're doing to the road, that gasoline-powered car, I guarantee, is going to pay a heavier tax. Why? Well, it doesn't do more damage to the road than the electric vehicle. It doesn't do more damage to the road than, I don't know, the plug-in or pick another one, a very fuel-efficient car, but what it does is spew out carbon into the atmosphere. So that has an environmental and probably a social impact. Therefore, you're going to pay more per mile than the guy who's running the EV car. I assure you that's the way it's going to go. How are they going to track you? Ooh, Big Brother's watching. Third-party onboard diagnostic devices. That would be something that you put in your car, and Big Brother gets to know everywhere you're going, how fast you're going, and how many miles you've gone. Smartphone applications, telemetric data collected by automakers, Yeah, that's for you people who have, you know, systems that are hooked up like OnStar. Motor vehicle data obtained by car insurance companies. Data from states that have received grants. Yes, under the FAST Act. Yeah, if you take money from the federal government, you must capitulate and do something the federal government wants. So, data from states that receive grants. Motor vehicle data obtained from fueling stations. And finally, any other method the secretary considers appropriate. Woo! Tracking you every day. That opens up a can of worms. As Dave Hatter has pointed out time and time again, they can figure out a whole hell of a lot about you based upon where you go. And as one I know Catholic priest has figured out, that would be the guy that used Grindr and ended up meeting people and went to gay clubs and things like that. And some third-party group unrelated to the church just was able to figure out based on tracking data and doing a little sleuthing that he was gay. And they outed him. Is that right? Well, they determined that just based upon where he went. 526 right now. Local stories coming up. 749-5500-800. It's 531 and a very happy Wednesday to you. I just looked up. I never have the television volume on. Sometimes the television's on, sometimes it's not. Since I lost, someone stole the remote in here. I have no control over it. I don't know how someone gets a channel change, but it's a Fox. It's on Fox News. I look up. There's a photograph of a bowl of ice cream, and below it, it says, "Flaming Hot Cheetos Ice Cream is here." Thank you, Joe. That's exactly the feeling I felt. There was bile in the back of my throat when I read that. Who in the hell asked for that anyway? And before I get to local stories, oh, parenthetically, before I get to the phone call here, Tom's on the line. I was disappointed to see this. University of Cincinnati is going to require all people to wear masks indoors, regardless of their vaccination status. You can see this coming, I guess. Just updated their COVID policy to include the requirement. This happened yesterday. Previously vaccinated students were not required to wear face masks indoors. That was one of the benefits of getting the vaccination. You got, well, rid of the face mask. Okay, this new thing goes into effect, looks like, tomorrow, August 5th. And that is 18 days before the classes begin. So school starts August 23rd, but if you're on campus, University of Cincinnati, indoors, you're going to have to have a mask on beginning tomorrow. According to the release, the requirement extends to all individuals unless you have received an exemption or accommodation or when eating, drinking, or alone in a private room. Well, isn't that nice? They let you be alone without a mask. Aww. People not fully vaccinated also require to wear face masks when outdoors and unable to maintain social distancing. Okay. I just must observe the devil's in the details. How in the hell are they going to know if someone's outside without a mask that that person has not been vaccinated? How? Someone explain this to me. New York City's got a vaccine passport now. You have to have one pretty much to go anywhere. Jeez, the oppression we are struggling under is just mighty. It's outrageous. Hey, Tom, happy Wednesday to you. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Brian. First of all, how do I get the sounder when you come in from break right before you do the weather?
Yep.
There's that, how do I get that for like a ringtone? I would love to have that on my phone.
I don't know. That would fall squarely into the production department, Tom. That's like the piece of God where Joe works.
But I knew you didn't have the answer, but I figured I'd throw it.
Joe is just shaking his head.
Congratulations, and a lot of thanks to Tamara Mistock, the young lady that won gold medal in wrestling.
Yeah.
And especially for her response when asked how it felt to represent the United States. Thank you very much, young lady. Greatly appreciate your heartfelt response. And also, kudos to Fox News for plastering all over their website and making sure that we know that these knuckleheaded, ungrateful athletes who want to use this opportunity to bash the country, they're actually in the minority, I believe.
Oh, they are.
For putting a story out there of somebody who shows appreciation for this country. Thanks, Brian.
Sure thing, Tom. You know, I agree with what Tom said. Sadly, that's news. That's the pathetic thing about it. That young lady, that champion wrestler, that's amazing. Her athletic skills are without peer. But that it made national news that she thanked God and her country. That was a default. Everyone thanked God and country when they used to win. It was like, no kidding. If you didn't do it, you were like, well, what's wrong with you? So the left media has painted this picture, and I think Tom is right. The people who are protesting the United States of America represent a small number of the overall group of athletes representing the United States, and yet they get all the press because they're protesting. We need to get used to the reality of the lies that are being perpetuated on us. I'm reminded of that old, back in the day, it was the silent moral majority. Yeah, they were out there. They were in big numbers, but they kept quiet. You know, you got to worry about the moral majority because, you know, you're facing them in the elections. The media would have you think that that it doesn't exist anymore. It's gone. Old-fashioned ideas. God and country. 536 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. You can't find honesty in roofing often. For whatever reason, roofing business attracts some unscrupulous characters. I know this well because my insurance agent, my claim guy, after I had to turn in a roof claim because of the hail damage, told me a bunch of stories that he's encountered over the .541, 55 Care CD Talk Station. Happy Wednesday. That's time for a stack of stupid. Absent phone call 749-5500, 800-823-TALK or #550 on AT&T phones. Remember, 55KRC.com on the blog page. Anytime you can't listen live, get a copy of Jesse Waters' book, How I Saved the World. Nice conversation with Jesse yesterday. Congressman Shabbat, conversation with him as well. And Charles Tassel. With my conversation with the CEO of the small landlord organization about the eviction moratorium being over, and of course, we find out as of yesterday afternoon, no, it's still in place. No legal authority to do it, but we're going to do it anyway. Anyhow, that qualifies as a stack of stupid story even in and of itself. So we turn to Minnesota. We have a woman living with her ex-husband, shot him in the head, and buried his body beneath the shed. This, according to authorities, Karina C. Her. S-E-E. That's her middle name. Her. H-E-R. Last name's Her. C. Her. Like that girl. 40 years old, arrested on Saturday in St. Paul after the body of her ex-husband, Ku Yang, 50, was found wrapped in some type of material. That's in quote. I guess it's in the arrest report. Beneath a newly built shed, this according to the criminal complaint, Yang's body discovered weeks after a neighbor called cops in early July to report of a foul smell from the neighbor's backyard, saying it had persisted for about a week. 911 caller then requested for a welfare check about Yang, July 22nd, saying that he hadn't been spotted for several weeks. See Her, who lived in the same home with Yang, described despite being divorced, also called the St. Paul police the same day to say that she hadn't seen him since July 1st. Yang's 17-year-old stepdaughter also called the police to report that she suspected that the, Karina See Her killed him while sharing text message she received from her 12-year-old sister. Younger sister indicated that she and her drove to the area about 45 miles north, where her took out her bag near holding a long object into a wooden area. Taylor Falls came back to the car without it. That 17-year-old told police that she found a hole in the backyard garden July 2nd and had been covered up with a tarp-like item. See Her later constructed a shed over the hole. She was taken into custody Saturday, suspicion of murder, St. Paul police said. Cops had gone to the home Thursday with a cadaver dog that reacted to the shed handle and door. Investigators found Yang's body beneath the shed. He had been shot twice in the back of the head, according to the medical examiner. Cops also found blood on a bedroom wall that was recently painted inside the couple's residence. Forensic experts will tell you that's you can't cover it up. Getting rid of blood? No, and bleach won't work either. Anyway, charged with second-degree murder, intentional murder, remains in jail on a $2 million bail. $2 million. Ha-ha, I love stories like this one. A multi-agency investigation in Northeast Ohio resulted in the arrest of dozens of sexual predators. Ha, look at the faces of these morons, sexual deviants. Mahoning County Sheriff's Office, Mahoning Valley Human Trafficking Force, and other state and local law enforcement agencies took part in the week-long operation targeting online sexual predators. Task force said 20 men were taken into custody over the weekend, believing they arranged to have sex with boys or girls. They were arrested for after traveling to where they thought they were meeting children. No, those are police officers you're talking to there, perv boy. Weekend sting was the culmination of a two-month investigation, resulting in the arrest of 34 total individuals, according to the Mahoning Valley Human Trafficking Task Force. Good job.
Here he is, the biggest douche of the universe.
34 of them.
In all the galaxies, there's no bigger douche than you.
Idiots, too.
You've reached the top, the pinnacle of douchedom. Good going, douche. Your dreams have come true.
$5.50 on a Wednesday. Dave Williams, Taxpayer Protection Alliance, has been busily reading the infrastructure bill and not quite sure how far he got through the 2,700 pages. We're going to find out at 7:05. I'm sure he's identified quite a few tidbits in there that are, well, laughably under the heading of infrastructure. Betsy Sunderman again at 8:05 on the pocket veto charter amendment and the loss of the St. Lawrence Bakery after 120 years. Judge Napolitano on freedom in the coming time of madness. That, of course, at 8:30. Back over to the stack of stupid. You may have heard this top of the hour news. We have an Ohio boy, local boy, flight crews had to deal with, an idiot. Unruly passenger is how he's described. Board a plane heading for Florida. According to the report from the Miami-Dade Police Department, Maxwell Barry, now facing three counts of misdemeanor battery for actions on the July 31st Frontier Airlines flight from Philly to South Florida. 22-year-old man, who the police said resides in Norwalk, Ohio, drank two alcoholic beverages and ordered a third when he inappropriately brushed his empty cup against the backside of a flight attendant. Victim responded, "Don't touch me." Fair enough. Barry then spilled the new drink on his shirt, according to the police. He went to the bathroom to clean up the spill, but he allegedly returned to his seat shirtless, which, of course, prompted the flight attendant to tell him to put his clothes back on. Pulled a new shirt from his carry-on luggage. He then proceeded to walk around the airplane for about 15 minutes and started to, quote, get friendly, close quote, with his second flight attendant. Police said Barry then groped the breasts of both flight attendants on multiple occasions. Another Frontier crew member was asked to watch over Barry. He asked on multiple occasions to remain seated and to calm down, but he instead punched the flight attendant in the face. Joe, I think we've got another war to give out here. Video.
Here he is.
Please confirm the passengers and crew. Had to restrain him.
In all the galaxies,
taping him to his seat for the balance of the seat. And of course,
good going, douche. Your dreams have come true.
One of the passengers obviously took video on the flight, showing Barry lashing out against crew members after he'd been taped down, hitting the flight attendant, and then being taped to his seat. Law enforcement met Mr. Barry at the Miami International Airport and then took him into custody. Records show his bond was set at $1,500, which doesn't seem very much. Several crew members were suspended for improperly restraining Barry during the flight, according to the reports. Find that hard to believe. FBI not pursuing federal felony charges against him. And not sure why on that one either. Unbelievable. Oh, no. Mask policy story. Got to have one of those, right? Customer at Community Food Market West Oakland got upset about the store's indoor mask mandate, threw a bag of groceries at the cashier, shattering glass items that were inside of it. This, according to the owner, Bram Amadi.
Not
too late for that. Yes, you are. Earlier in the month, another customer threw a watermelon at an employee. And in a separate incident, the general manager had to duck to avoid a full can of soda that a customer chucked at his head. Since Community Food Market started asking customers to mask up again, verbal animosity and physical harassment from customers have become a regular occurrence. This, according again to the store owners, employees are worn down, stressed out, forced to be the role of public health enforcers in this, well, sea of seemingly conflicting advice. And you got to feel for these poor people. So businesses now creating their own policies around masks and proof of vaccination. Others not. They're hesitant to do so out of fear of potential conflict with customers. Bay Area health officials, although Monday, announced a renewed indoor mask mandate applying to everyone vaccinated or unvaccinated to stem the surge. It's the Delta variant. So that takes the pressure off each individual store from having different rules. Now, you can see how this unfolds. We have people who will not behave in a courteous manner. It's all about me. So you got an all about me person walking in, and that all about me person is going to have a mindset. Masks for everyone, or leave me the hell alone, and why do you have a mask policy? Under the current state of affairs, there are no mask mandates, generally speaking, and that individual businesses are left up to their own devices on whether or not to require their employees or people coming in the private businesses to wear masks. So the individual with the chip on their shoulder, whether they're maskers or anti-maskers, are going to be confrontational with a policy that conflicts with their own state of mind. Different store, different policies. The bad part about all this is people seem to think it's appropriate to throw things, break things, and get into verbal arguments with the store owners. You don't like it? You don't like what's going on in there? Take your business elsewhere and do so in a civilized fashion. Please. Well, you end up in the stack of stupid. 556 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. Be back after the news.
The world is calling.
Inflation. The border.
Chinese scientists.
Russian cyber terrorism.
And we'll take you there.
Get out of the house this summer.
On 55 KRC, the talk station.
Hey, it's 6:06. Happy Wednesday. Brian Thomas right here. Glad to have Joe Strecker as my executive producer. And welcoming phone calls, as I always do. If you'd like to call and comment about something, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. 1 hour from out, Dave Williams, Taxpayer Protection Alliance. Looking forward to talking to him about the infrastructure bill. Lots of crazy in it. And in the last hour, I pointed out one of the things they're going to do, a test pilot program to track the number of miles you drive. And through a whole bunch of, you know, crazy Big Brother-ish electronic means, using your cell phones, you know, in voluntarily installed devices, they'll know where you go, when you go, and how far you traveled to get to wherever it is you go, obviously raising a multitude of privacy concerns. And, of course, since the environment is one of the reasons they want to track your mileage, they claim it's in the name of, you know, building up the highway trust fund, which doesn't have enough money with the 19 or so cents they get per gallon in taxes. And with EVs and high mileage cars, there's a lot less money being taken in. So they're trying to figure out another way. And I'm not against the idea of taxing based upon the number of miles you drive, if that was all it is. But, you know, since environment is one of the motivations for this, it isn't just money and infrastructure, it's protecting the environment. So the amount of taxes per mile that you will ultimately pay will certainly, in my estimation, be impacted by the type of car you drive. Now, it makes sense that, you know, wear and tear on a road, it's going to be, well, worse if a truck is driving over. They weigh more, they have more tires, they tear up the road surfaces more readily than a smaller, compact car. So that certainly would justify a difference simply because of the wear and tear factor. But, you know, an EV, electronic vehicle, sitting next to a gasoline-powered vehicle, assuming they weigh roughly the same, really no difference in wear and tear on the road. But there's that pesky environment. You're ruining the environment with your, you know, your stupid gasoline-powered automobile. So we're going to charge you more per mile than the electronic vehicle will be charged per mile. I guarantee you that's the way that's going to shake out. Just one thing that popped up. Also, again, the word equity. Equity is in the infrastructure bill a multitude of times. So how that relates to infrastructure, I don't know, but we're certainly going to find out what Dave Williams has determined through his, well, rough read. How can he get through 2,700 pages? Ask your congressman that. Betsy Sunderman, Cincinnati City Councilwoman, is going to be talking about this charter amendment for a pocket veto. And also get her thoughts and comments on the closing of the St. Lawrence Bakery. Local news reporting that the electrical issue which led to its demise, part of it. But after reading the story, it sounds like the owners were really in full retirement mode anyway, and their offspring aren't interested in running a bakery. So it may be that this electrical issue just merely the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of their decisions to retire and close. Don't know, but we'll see what Betsy has on that one. Judge Napolitano, Freedom in the Coming Time of Madness, is new op-ed piece about the oppression of government during these COVID times and how they rely on COVID to oppress us. And that's exactly what happened yesterday with the Biden administration's new eviction moratorium. I mean, it expired. I can't believe the huevos that the Biden administration has after everyone agreed there is no lawful basis upon which to extend the eviction moratorium. The White House issued a statement the other day saying it didn't have any legal authority. None. The CDC said it scoured the laws and the statutes and the regs. It couldn't find an authority to extend the moratorium. The Supreme Court had the eviction moratorium on its lap, and although Kavanaugh did allow it to stay in place, very specifically stated that on the expiration, July 31st, the CDC had no legal authority to extend the eviction moratorium. That legislative branch needed to act. You need to get your butt in gear, legislative branch, Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi ends up turning around and pointing to the White House. What's wrong here? How come you don't extend the eviction moratorium? Democrats camping out on the Capitol Hill steps over the expiration of the eviction moratorium. Who are they protesting? Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden. They know the Republicans aren't going to extend this thing. It's a wasted gesture. They're trying to get the Republicans to change their mind, but they do have a majority in Congress, don't they? Sadly, for the Democrats, a sizable number of their own people in their own party were not in favor of extending the eviction moratorium, primarily because it hurt some of their constituents, namely landlords. There's some sad stories about landlords. I read one about this poor woman who only owned, I think, a couple of buildings, one apartment unit, and she was using it to supplement her income. She's now homeless because she's not getting the money from the rent that sustained her life. She therefore couldn't afford to live in where she was living, and she can't move into her own rental property because there are people in there that can't be evicted because of the eviction moratorium. How absurd is that? But extend it, they did. CDC bans target areas. It applies to target areas that have experienced substantial or high levels of COVID-19 transmission. It's in these areas that apparently they determined that they do have the power to extend the eviction moratorium. Interestingly enough, those substantial or high levels apparently cover more than 80% of U.S. counties. So it's pretty much a blanket rule. And the point being, and I think if they were honest with you, they all would agree, having said so out loud last week and even earlier this week, that they had no authority to extend the moratorium, that the only reason they're doing this is to, well, wait for the court case to get filed. Someone's going to run in and get an injunction or seek an injunction, and they're going to have some time between today and that moment in time to get people interested in signing up for the $47 billion in rental assistance that was put in place previously. Only $3 billion of that has been tapped. And there are some landlords that aren't interested in it. They have turned down these payments, saying that it carries too many conditions. Whoa. Now, I read that in the Wall Street Journal. Some landlords have turned down payments saying that the aid carries too many conditions, such as preventing the eviction of problematic tenants or compelling them to turn over sensitive financial information. You see the price you pay when you accept money from the federal government? There's $47 billion. It's supposed to solve this crisis, right? But if you take any of it, you got to give up your rights. You got to give up something in return. I mean, hell, they already took the money out of your paycheck or your rent. So I just I don't know why this comes as so much of a shock to me this morning. I mean, it was with absolute disbelief that I saw that they went ahead and did this. President Biden said yesterday, I asked the CDC to get back and consider other options. This was prior to the announcement, all right? Insofar as whether this new approach passed this constitutional muster, Joe Biden said, I don't know, but acknowledged a likely legal fight will provide more time to get the congressional money distributed. So there you have it. They will engage in outright lawlessness in the face of everyone saying that there is no authority to do this. Why? Well, Delta variant. Oh, my God, hotspots. It's running rampant. We've got to do something. Extend the eviction moratorium. And they're milking this Delta variant thing for all it's worth. And if you don't think that they're going to try to work this thing into next year's presidential election, and certainly the primaries, then you are a fool. Of course, the decision yesterday after administration officials said Monday that Biden had asked the CDC on Sunday to come up with a new 30-day eviction moratorium focused on areas with high COVID-19 rates rather than months-long options previously proposed. See, it's a subtle change in the way they're doing it. Previously, blanket eviction moratorium. Now it's hotspot-focused. And it's not blanket in terms of time. I suppose the eviction moratorium will end when the area is no longer considered a hotspot. Or when we reach what they call herd immunity. And the landscape has changed on that one too, by the way, folks. So it used to be, I think it was 80%. They have it right here. Yeah, the herd immunity threshold has been changed. Previously, you may have heard 80%. It's now 90. You see, they don't want it to go away. I really don't think they want it to go away. The powers that be got a whole lot of new power laying in their lap, and they are loving it. And the only reason it works is because we let it. We allow it. 616, 55KRC, the talk station. Coming up, looks like... At 621 right now, 55KRC, the talk station. Midweek. And 1 week away from our next listener lunch, Wiedemann Fine Beer and Brew House in St. Bernard. Great spot. We've been there before, and I hope you get to make it. Get a good time. Usually always is. Anyway, we got a report released by Attorney General Letitia James in New York. Governor Cuomo's got a few problems on his hands. He's been dealing with sexual harassment allegations from multiple women for a while. Of course, he continues to deny them. But the odds on him lasting now are starting to pile up, and they're talking about criminal investigation as well. Now, Letitia James's report was directed at it was a civil investigation, but it could, again, lead to some criminal charges. So, harassment by the Democratic governor, unwanted groping, kissing, hugging, inappropriate comments, generally speaking, boiled down, that's what they amount to. Claim of one assistant who says Cuomo reached under her blouse and grabbed her breast during an encounter at his executive mansion, which the attorney general's appointed investigators found to be a credible claim. Okay. Report led to a bunch of calls for his resignation from Joe Biden. President Biden suggested that Cuomo should step down. The state assembly Democrats say they're going to start moving to impeach him. His own folks are going to move forward to impeach him. He issued a 14-minute video address denying he inappropriately touched anybody and vowing he was going to stay in his office. He said, that is just not who I am, and that is not who I have ever been. A lot of people are saying things to the contrary. Several members of staff claim to have been harassed by him. A state trooper that was part of his security detail claimed harassment. An energy company employee, Department of Health doctor who administered a coronavirus test on him live on television, made claims as well. Again, as I mentioned, it's civil nature in terms of the investigation, but the criminal exposure comes in a statement. Albany County District Attorney David Soares, acknowledged that he's got an ongoing criminal investigation related to this. Back to Letitia James, said the investigation revealed conduct that corrodes the very fabric and character of our state government. Quote, none of this would have been eliminated if not for heroic women who came forward. I am inspired by all the brave women who came forward, but more importantly, I believe them, and I thank them for their bravery. Now, Cuomo's attorney, a woman named Rita Glavin, released an 85-page report of her own, trying to refute the findings of the attorney general's report. 85 pages of refutation? Talk about a quick release, too. I mean, Letitia James' report just came out, and bam, he's already got an 85-page refutation. That's rather interesting. Anyway, the investigators focused on claims from 11 women. Some of them had told their stories in the press. Others, well, the report was the first time. Boiling down the instances of harassment, Charlotte Bennett, 24-year-old Cuomo aide, claimed that Cuomo asked her multiple inappropriate questions, including whether she had slept with an older man, which, when you add the questions together, she concluded that Cuomo was propositioning her for sex. That story corroborated by text messages to friends and family members, presumably from Charlotte Bennett, almost in real time. State trooper told investigators Cuomo had asked her to find him a girlfriend while she was working on the governor's security detail. Oh, yeah, while you're keeping me safe, keep your eyes peeled for some chicks, would you, bud? Or ma'am? Thanks. She also said the governor told her his criteria was someone who can, quote, handle pain, close quote. Well, I suppose being around Governor Cuomo in and of itself will be a matter of dealing with pain. Anyway, I'll let you draw your own conclusions about what he meant. Unnamed executive assistant detailed her claim that Cuomo had reached under her blouse and again grabbed her breast, this during a hug in November 2020 at the executive mansion. A woman named Virginia Lamiitis, employee from an energy company, said she waited to meet Cuomo at a rope line after an event. She claims Cuomo pressed down on a logo on the chest area of her shirt with two fingers, then leaned in, told her he was going to stay there, say that there was a spider on her, and then brushed the area between her shoulder and chest. Okay. The doctor I mentioned earlier that administered the COVID-19 test said Cuomo made an inappropriate comment before they appeared on television. While on camera, Cuomo said the doctor made her gown look good. I don't personally find a problem with that one. Multiple current and former staff members, including Anna Lissa Rochester, said they were subjected to unwanted hugs and kisses on their face or hand from Cuomo. So, who else is calling for his resignation? Nancy Pelosi. Under Attorney General Letitia James, a comprehensive and independent investigation of the allegations against Governor Cuomo has been completed, Pelosi said. As always, I commend the woman who came forward to speak their truth, recognizing his love of New York and the respect for the office he holds. I call upon the governor to resign. Chuckie Schumer, he had already reached that conclusion back in March. He issued another statement basically saying the same thing. Come on, resign now. Joe Biden, as I mentioned a moment ago, also has called for his resignation. The entire New York congressional delegation has called for his resignation. Does anybody think he's going to go? He says he's not. 627, 55KRCD Talk Station. Hey, 631, happy Wednesday. I look over my phone and I see that I received a text and look down. It was after I did my 22-3 firearm commercial. And I mentioned date night, how it was a lock night. Just go there, spend an hour with your date and fire in the range. It's a lot of fun. I had done it and I highly encourage it and recommend it. My wife texts me, "So who did you take to the firing range other than me?" Brenda was her name. Anyway, over to local stories. Looks like, well, I don't think she would deny it if she was here. Ohio lawmakers last Friday formally introduced a bill to legalize marijuana production, possession, production, and sales here in Ohio. Think about this. How did we get medical marijuana in Ohio? It's because they were circulating a petition, a ballot initiative to legalize weed in Ohio. That forced the legislature to act immediately. What they did is they looked at Pennsylvania's recently passed legislation. And they basically stole it and put medical marijuana into law here in Ohio before the people who were circulating the legalized weed petition could get enough signatures to force it onto the ballot. Oh, my God, they're going to make legalized weed in Ohio. We got to do something to protect our phony baloney jobs and protect people from themselves. That's how it became. But this one, why would they be pushing for legalized weed now? Well, because activists are pursuing a ballot initiative that would force the legislature to consider a similar cannabis reform. So this bill is brought to you by Casey Weinstein and Terrence Upchurch, both Democrats. They were circulating and looking for co-sponsors. It's a 180-page bill. Would legalize possession up to 5 ounces of weed for adults 21 and older, and allow them to cultivate up to 12 plants for personal use. That's a lot of plants. I'm going to have to look into this because my understanding is you can get more than a couple of ounces of weed if you have a very, very healthy big plant. So how that translates. Anyway, not my problem, and it's not law yet. Also includes provisions to expunge prior convictions for possession and cultivation activities that have been made legal under the measure. So it looks like some records expungement for those possessing weed that have records. UC going to require you to wear masks, even if you've been vaccinated. It's sad to read this. Beginning tomorrow, classes start August 23rd, by the way. You have to wear a mask if you're indoors, regardless of whether you're vaccinated. And for unvaccinated, they say you have to wear a mask outdoors as well. Again, I'll go back to the question of how in the hell they're going to know who's vaccinated and who's not. So there you have it. Public, if you're in student housing, you're going to have to show proof of vaccination. We go to Mount Adams. A break-in suspect couldn't get in the front door of the home he was targeting, so he cut the power to the entire house. This happened Monastery Street Saturday night. Homeowner Noel Ripley, double-checking her locks that day, she goes, "I got an alert on my Ring camera saying someone was at my front door. So when I looked at my camera, I saw a guy jiggling the front door." She says when the suspect couldn't get in, he stood there a while until her husband said something. "My husband peeked over our deck, and I asked him if he was okay," Ripley said. "He never responded. So we really didn't think that much at this point. We thought he would walk away. He did, but an hour later," she said, "she saw the suspect outside her house again. Then the power went out." She said at this point it was completely dark. "I noticed none of my neighbors had their lights off." She said she looked to see what was going on when something else caught their attention. She said, "We heard a noise on the side of the house, and it was in the bushes. So at that point, we put two and two together. Not only was he on the side of the house in the bushes, our power box was there, so we got inside the main power box, and it flipped off our main power." She believes the suspect was trying to cut the surveillance system after noticing the Ring camera. She called the police. Took them 45 minutes to show up because of traffic due to the FCC match. Can we learn something from this story? Is there something to be learned from this story? Now, I'm not blaming the Cincinnati police. I don't know what happened. You got a potential intruder. Maybe the guy's whacked out on methamphetamine. Maybe he's got a firearm. Maybe he just cut the power off to your house because he's coming inside to do grievous bodily harm to you. 45 minutes. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. I suggest strongly that you exercise that right. I'm not saying you had that is not a suggestion that under these circumstances they could have shot the guy. But if things got a little bit squirrely, they did the right thing by calling the police now, didn't they? But if he had made it into the house and they had no firearm and he was armed or maybe, again, imbalanced emotionally on some kind of drug. We've heard a million times what kind of the things that drugs do to people. You have no idea what's coming your way. Be nice to have a firearm under those circumstances. The great equalizer. 749.
You're going to have a bad time.
749-5500-800-823-TALK. #550 on your AT&T phone. Plum Tight Plumbing. Amazing. Yeah, 641 right now, PD5 Care City Talk Station. Dave Williams, Taxpayer Protection Line, is coming up after top of the hour news. Has he read the entire bill? If anybody could do it, Dave Williams is the one. Looking forward to talking to him about that. Also, talking to you as well, Jane's on the phone. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Hit #550 on AT&T phones. Hey, Jane, thanks for calling this morning. Happy Wednesday to you.
Hi. Thank you. It's to you as well.
Thank you. Sorry. What's on your mind today, Jane?
Well, I guess I'm just a little frustrated. I teach here in a certain district in Hamilton County, and I was informed yesterday by a union rep that I am being disciplined because in a Facebook post that was in a certain group, that tends to be a little bit more conservative.
Sure.
I called the teaching of CRT and the idea of it in our schools delusional. And that's the word I used. No cussing, no names, no anything else. And I'm being disciplined for it.
Wow. Now, you're in a teacher's union, right?
Yes, I am.
And do you have, like, a union representative that will be appointed to you to contest these allegations, these ridiculous charges that you're subject to disciplinary action for voicing your own opinion, which there's nothing wrong with your conclusion on that, Jane. I think that's a rather sound and sane conclusion you reach about critical race theory. But you're entitled to that opinion. You don't have to abide, and you don't have to teach it in your off hours. What do they say?
Apparently, there's language within our contract that they feel at the board that I went against. And so apparently this can be anything from just a verbal reprimand to a letter in my file, or I can lose a day of work, up to 3 days of work, or I can be fired. And
wow.
I'm just flabbergasted.
Well, it sounds to me like you may need yourself a good employment lawyer. I'm not sure how union rules factor into what we're talking about here, but certainly this seems to run headlong into your protected constitutional rights. I don't believe an employer can, you know, govern what you say 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you're not in an employment at will situation. You're subject to a union contract and collective bargaining. So it's not like, hey, I just want to fire you. In Ohio, it's employment at will, so you can run that risk. But I don't know how that applies to a union situation, and I don't think it does. I'm troubled by it. I would hate that any school district would do that. And clearly, it suggests to me, Jane, and you took a shot at critical race theory. Are they teaching that in your school district? Or is this just in advance of the – you had concern about CRT, and you were just voicing it ahead of time?
It has been brought up. It has been brought up in meetings. Outside people have come into the school, and it has been discussed.
So it's being debated.
It's being brought up as this is what we're leaning towards.
Well, what we're leaning towards, but no decision's been made, which means it's still the subject of a debate. Is this something that we will embrace? It is are we going to incorporate this into our curriculum? What does the school board have to say about it? These are debate topics, Jane. And part of a debate is for people like you to say, I think it's a bad idea. There are women, or rather there are teachers and others on the other side of the room who would say, no, no, it's a good idea. And you have a discussion about it. Part of it being a bad idea is you can say it's delusional and provide certain examples of why you believe it to be delusional. You're entitled to your opinions.
I am, but I was told to be, during the meeting, I was told that I need to be very apologetic and contrite, and maybe, you know, this will not be so bad.
Wow. So toe the line, sit down, Jane, take your medicine and get your ear full and dutifully nod and apologize, and we won't come down hard on you and fire you. That's really what you're saying, Jane?
That's kind of the way it sounded.
I'm sure it did sound that way. Jane, I wish I had better advice for you. I'm trying from a lawyer perspective. I never did employment law. Randy Freaking, he's a great employment lawyer. It's the first name that pops in my mind. Freaking and Best, they have an excellent reputation. It seems to me, though, that your union's probably letting you down by not appointing someone to sit in your corner and defend your interests.
Well, my rep is a lawyer. At least that's what he informed me. So we are going to discuss some things again.
Yes, you should.
And so we shall see what
Jane
happens.
I'm saddened and distressed to hear that would happen to you. It's awful, and it's an affront to just the whole idea of education. Because part of the education process, this is something I mention all the time, we used to have Socratic method in school where we would engage back and forth, professor with student. We could offer independent ideas and thoughts on various topics, political and otherwise. It was accepted. It was a responsible thing to do. You could disagree. You could be told, no, you are logically wrong for the following reasons, and no one suffered the consequences for it. This is stifling debate. This is not allowing debate. This is forcing people with an alternative viewpoint from this leftist nonsense that they must sit down and mind their P's and Q's and be quiet at all times. I can't abide. I think it's awful. It's the wrong direction for our society, and I hope to God that they back off. And if they don't, I hope to God that you take them to task for it, Jane, and I wish you the best of luck. I really do. Coming up on 648, 55 KRC, the talk station. What a sad, sad reality. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. CME Pipelining. At 6:52, coming up on 6:53, Dave Williams, Taxpayer Protection Alliance, after top of the hour news. We'll see how far through the infrastructure bill he's got. And, you know, stupidity abounds. And, of course, I like when Senator Rand Paul calls out craziness. Go ahead. You know, abide by this one. National Institute of Health Director Dr. Francis Collins said yesterday that parents should wear masks at home to protect their children. Joe, what do you think? He went with my dad's line. I got two words for you. It ain't happy birthday. Well, if Dr. Francis Collins comes knocking on your door, I can warn him ahead of time what to expect. He said, it's clear that the Delta variant is capable of causing serious illness in kids, while addressing whether young children should avoid indoor situations. He noted that while rare, in other words, while hardly ever happens, there are examples of young people being sickened by the virus, and cited new recommendations for children under 12 to avoid being in places where they might get infected. What, like school? Also recommended universal masking, speaking of schools, at schools, and again, for adults at home. Quote, parents of unvaccinated kids should be thoughtful about this, and the recommendation is to wear masks there as well. I know that's uncomfortable. I know it seems weird, but it's the best way to protect your kids. Close quote. It is weird and uncomfortable. And what did Senator Rand Paul? He said, how can people who are so smart say such stupid things? He can put it a point on it, a fine point. He went on to say, there is no science to defend putting your kids in masks or parents wearing masks. No science whatsoever. If there were, we would be wearing masks for years and years, because for kids, the death rate is about the same as the seasonal flu, maybe less than the seasonal flu. So is Francis Collins proposing that because the flu is with us forever, the parents should be wearing masks around the kids that have the flu? It's absolutely and utterly without scientific evidence. Now they're all freaking out right now by the Delta variant. One thing is, in all likelihood true, it is more transmissible, significantly more transmissible. But guess what? Every bit of the evidence shows it's less deadly, significantly less deadly. Public Health England looked at 92,000 people. If you were vaccinated and under 50, there were no deaths. You're under 50, there were no deaths. If you were unvaccinated and under 50, 0.08%. Still very, very small. So it's not an argument for not getting vaccinated. It's an argument for not getting hysterical over the Delta variant. We shouldn't be changing any mandates, and really, in all likelihood, the masks don't affect that trajectory of the virus at all. The only thing that's slowing the virus down is the vaccine and natural immunity, and they continue to ignore natural immunity because they think that we are all too far behind. We got to vaccinate the children, but in reality, I think it's 90% of the people over 65 have been vaccinated. That's extraordinary. We should be celebrating. Senator Rand Paul, amen. Thank you for speaking truth to, well, I would say power normally, but in this particular case, let me see, your word, stupid. Speaking truth to stupid. Dave Williams does that all the time. He'll be on right off the top of the hour news to talk about the infrastructure bill. I hope he can stick around.
The Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show.
The authoritarian busybodies are not done with us.
Today at noon on 55 KRC, the talk station.
It's 7:05, coming up at 7:06 at 55 KRC, the talk station. Ah, little theme song music for one of my favorite recurring guests. And he knows what's coming. Dave Williams from the Taxpayer Protection Alliance. You'll find him online in bookmark at protectingtaxpayers.org. Oh, I had a great welcome back, Dave. It's always fun talking with you. You know it's our favorite topic, those streetcars, because they're so worth the money spent on them.
Thanks, Brian. And when I heard that music, I just felt my wallet being emptied. $1 at a time just flying out of my wallet.
This is a good one, Dave. Hold on. I get a call, and it's not usual. You know, every once in a while, I'll get a call after the show from Joe Strecker. Joe's got, you know, he naps during the day. So we don't spend a whole lot of time talking to each other during the day. So when I see the phone light up, I'm like, I'm answering this call, because when Joe calls, it's usually something very important.
It's like the bat phone.
It's like, no. Yeah, the guest that we were planning is not going to be on. Are you free after the show tomorrow? It's usually something work-related. So his first question is, hey, Joe, what's going on? He goes, do you remember how much the streetcar costs to operate annually? And I'm like, oh, gee, I think the $5 million sticks in my mind or something like that. But I don't know about the debt service. Because if you recall, Dave, our city borrowed $100 million after they were given, got $50 million from the federal government, subject to multiple strings.
Welcome.
Yeah, I know. Thank you very much. Appreciate your D.C. taxes paying for that. So we have debt service on $100 million, right? And I didn't know what an interest rate we got. I didn't know if the $5 million figure that I recalled. So bottom line is, I'm friends with the vice mayor. I text him. Said, Christopher, can you tell me what it costs annually to operate the streetcar, including debt service? And his response, and it's round numbers, so it's not to the penny, but $5 million to run it and $5 million for debt service. So $10 million, Dave. $10 million in a city that doesn't have any leftover money, and in fact, usually operating at a deficit of $30 million. So you take, Joe then proceeds to tell me what the ridership numbers are. And they came out. Our banner month, I think, was July. The figure was about 53,000. So we went ahead and took the liberty of multiplying that times 12. You come up with 600,000 riders, and it's free now. We're not even charging a fee, Dave.
Good gracious.
Phase three profit. So you divide $10 million by the 600,000, and you end up with $16.60 some odd cents per rider.
Wow.
Per ride. How many Uber rides can you get for that?
That's incredible. And guess what, Brian? With this infrastructure bill, may see more of these streetcars pop up around the country.
He said that right after we had this conversation. Well, Dave Williams of the Taxpayer Protection Alliance is coming on tomorrow, and I immediately busted out in laughter. I said, he loves talking about the streetcar. And he said, as of yesterday, apparently you had only gotten to page 800 in the bill and hadn't yet found streetcar money. So did you make it through all 2,700 pages, Dave Williams?
Well, my therapist said that I probably shouldn't read all 2,700 pages. But, Brian, here's the problem. So we have a 2,700-page infrastructure bill that's going to cost taxpayers $1.2 trillion. There's no mention of streetcars, but there's a catch here. Remember, a few months ago, Congress brought back earmarks into the budgeting system. So whether streetcars are mentioned or not, guess what? It's going to happen. I want you to write down today's day. What is it? August 4th.
Fourth.
That we're going to remember this day, and we're going to have a conversation a few months from now, maybe half a year from now, where we're talking about streetcars being funded through the infrastructure bill. Because I can guarantee you that with earmarks coming back, there are going to be more streetcars in this country. And obviously, D.C. has its own streetcar that costs $220 million for a two-mile streetcar.
Oh, wow. I thought we were the laughing stock of the country. We got a deal. We got 3.4 miles for $150 million. No.
As they say, as the kids say, I shouldn't say kids, but hold my beer, right?
Right.
D.C.
Well, you probably got a better deal on your stadium because we're still the laughing stock of the country with the Paul Brown Stadium. We all know that. Lord Almighty,
okay.
Dave.
You have us on that.
So what you're saying then, and I know there's not a single person in elected capacity that's read this entire bill. I defy them. I'd like to lie detector anybody who said they read the whole thing. That is a bunch of crap. But so what you're suggesting, though, is since the House, I guess the House hasn't come up with its own version, there's going to be some sort of, you know, reconciliation process, and ultimately something's going to be voted on, which is going to look different than the Senate's version, right?
Oh, for sure, and
so and that's where the earmark—that's where the earmark part comes in.
That's exactly.
Okay.
And I'm using air quotes here. This is when they negotiate,
right.
and whenever Congress negotiates, you know that's bad for taxpayers. And you know what's fascinating is that the Senate's not going to vote on this until the weekend. So you know it's the middle of summer, and I used to complain about Congress going home and having a 6-week vacation.
Yeah.
I'm taking all of that back. Can you find those tapes? Erase those tapes and say, yes, I want them home, because that means that they're not passing trillion-dollar spending bills
with
pork in it.
I'm with you. So. And, you know, I guess I have to ask you from a political standpoint, because this seems to be the big, you know, talking head discussion. How come, and I know there's a lot of Republicans and talking head commentators on the conservative side of the agenda that are really, really angry with the Republicans who negotiated this, because first off, in terms of dollars really toward infrastructure, there's not much there. Second off, how it's being paid for is suspect, as all government bills are suspect. And also that it gives Joe Biden a check in the win column, because most people are in favor of infrastructure, but they have no idea what this bill has in it.
Yeah, $1.2 trillion, and we're talking about maybe $150 billion in roads and bridges, like true infrastructure. And it's a real head-scratcher, but when you think about it, these are photo ops for members of Congress.
Yeah.
Next year is an election year. So what they're going to do is, whether it's a new streetcar, whether it's, you know, you name the sort of transportation project, they're going to put out a press release. They're going to have a photo op next to it and say, look what I brought back to the district. Now, you never hear about the deficit and debt that they're incurring to bring that project back to the district or the state. And what I, you know, one of my ideas, and this is, goes back a long time ago, is to have a plaque on each one of these projects and say, this project helped contribute to the $29 trillion debt. I would like to see that on every earmark that Congress gets.
Wow. Yeah, that would be a great idea. Much in the same way everything in West Virginia is named after former Klan member Robert Byrd. Go figure that one out. And how come there's no cancel culture on that?
Well, and Brian, think about this. So we have sent, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars to West Virginia, and it's not the richest state in the country. Like, people say that government creates wealth. It does not. If government created wealth, West Virginia would be the richest state in this country. It is not. People create wealth. Small businesses create wealth. In actuality, government just sucks the wealth out of the country.
Yeah, that $100 million had to come from, or billion had to come from somewhere. It came from other states because clearly West Virginia is not generating the income to provide into the tax base.
Exactly.
Wow, crazy. So what's in it? I mean, what have you figured out? I know gender identity is mentioned in there. I know the word equity apparently is in there like 40-some-odd times. So infrastructure, not all about infrastructure. It's about a lot more than that.
Well, a commission to promote women in the trucking industry.
We need a commission for that.
Apparently,
I thought it was just a high-paying job. I mean, this is 2021. If a woman wants to be a truck driver, Dave, and make north of $100,000 a year, I would think that she might want to line up and go to the trucking program on her own. She needs incentive for that.
We have fish restoration and recreational boating safety.
You got more of those?
Well, we have the electric vehicle charging stations. This thing just really just boggles my mind, Brian. $7.5 billion for electric vehicles and just for the charging stations. And listen, we know that, you know, middle-income people are not buying electric vehicles. And can you imagine the outrage if there is money in this bill to build gas stations?
Oh,
people would be losing their minds, but because it's electric vehicles, people seem to be looking, well, most people are looking the other way, not me, not the Taxpayers Protection Alliance.
But the electric vehicle industry exists on and only exists because of government incentives and subsidies. I mean, we wouldn't have windmill farms if it weren't for incentives from government. I mean, that's just a reality.
For sure. And let's see, an invasive plant elimination program.
See, now you might have me on that one because the invasive species are all over. Have you ever seen the South? Kudzu is everywhere. That is an invasive species.
I thought that was a comic strip.
Kudzu? I don't know. I may actually backed out because no one could have brought us the interstate highway system other than a federal program because it was so huge. It was interstate, and it required land acquisition and millions of dollars. And, of course, the benefit we reaped from it was speeding up commerce and industry, which generated billions and billions, if not trillions, of tax dollars. So the payoff was there. Now, I don't think
infrastructure. That is infrastructure.
It is infrastructure.
When you're building interstate highways, when you're repairing bridges,
yep.
That is infrastructure. This bill is doing very little of that, and it really has lost its focus. And now Congress is going to pass this bill, probably, like I said, on Saturday or Sunday, at least the Senate is, and setting it up for the House. And so there's one program in here called the Healthy Streets Initiative. Sounds
right, well,
pretty innocuous.
All right,
right?
I tell you what. Wait, Dave, you mind holding? I mean, because we're over time in the segment, and this one sounds very interesting and absurd at the same time. So I don't want to have to cut you off. So let's hang on. If you can hold on, I'll bring you right back after a brief word, and we'll talk about that one. And it's 7:20 right now. Coming up on 7:21, 55 KRC, the talk station. We'll be dealing with Councilwoman Betsy Sunderman, who's got a great idea. Pocket veto charter amendment coming up at 8:05, along with her comments on the loss of the St. Lawrence Bakery after 120 years. And in Napolitano at 8:30 on freedom in the coming time of madness. In the meantime, enjoying my conversation. There is a lot of levity and stupidity, and I'm always enjoy the yucks we get when we talk with Dave Williams from the Taxpayer Protection Alliance, even though this is very serious stuff. Dave, you're getting ready to tell us about yet another little juicy tidbit in this so-called transportation bill.
Yeah, Brian, and if we don't laugh, we're going to cry.
I know.
Right? Because it's so ridiculous. And, you know, let's be clear, and you mentioned this earlier, is that Republicans are just as responsible for this as Democrats.
Oh, yeah.
It took 17 Republicans to move the bill forward last week. So, you know, neither party has the you know, fiscally moral high ground here when it comes to spending. And, you know, if the Republicans were a lot better during the Trump administration, if Trump were better on spending, you know, we may be in a different situation. But, you know, getting back to some of these examples, and the one that jumps out to me is this Healthy Streets Initiative. And again, it sounds innocuous. Well, we all want healthy streets. This is
healthy.
$100 million.
You said it's streets. healthy? Come on. That just raises red flags just by its name alone. You said it sounds innocuous. Who describes a street as healthy or unhealthy? It's the condition you're... I mean, come on.
Yeah.
What are you taking its temperature?
This is part of the incremental Green New Deal. This is what they're doing.
Yes, it is.
The infrastructure bill is, incrementally they're passing the Green New Deal, because what this does, it shuts off streets in major cities and plants flowers and has bike lanes. And notice, this is for inner cities. And this is where the Democrats have their base when it comes to voting. So that's why when you look at a lot of these green programs, it's really targeting voters in these areas. It has nothing to do with the environment, because the government is not, if there is climate change, the government is not the entity to fix that. I mean, the government can barely count people in a census. How are they going to address climate change? So, but that's what this bill is. It's really a handout to the cities to shore up the Democrats' base. And I don't want to be, that guy, but this is what we're seeing. We're seeing a lot of virtue signaling, a very expensive virtue signaling in this infrastructure bill.
Well, I'm just not shocked. The other thing I found, Dave, and you talk about green, there was a proposal in there where it will set up rather a study to talk about charging people by the mile for driving on roads, which I don't have necessarily an objection to, because, of course, those using the road should be paying for them rather than those who are not using the road. That's the basis for the gasoline tax. Obviously, with cars becoming more fuel efficient in the name of greenhouse gas emissions, in the name of saving us money, whatever, and electric vehicles, clearly they're not taking in the bucks they used to with the gasoline tax, which hasn't changed since the 90s. Fine. So, in this proposal, though, the way they're collecting data is a little Orwellian, just to the understatement of the year. Obviously, cell phone, installation of GPS trackers, et cetera, so they'll know exactly where you go, including how much money or how many miles you drive. And they'll also base the tax on any number of things. Of course, the size and weight of the vehicle will matter. But, Dave, since they factor in the environment, do you think just maybe that the tax on a car that is run by gasoline, all things being equal, weight and size, with an EV vehicle next to it, who do you think is going to be paying more tax per mile, the gasoline car or the electric car? It's a rhetorical question.
Well, of course it's rhetorical, but the gasoline car. But think about this. Think about farmers. Very heavy equipment that there's going to be a different tax for that.
Yes, sir.
And a higher tax for farm equipment. So, from the surveillance of this, which should send a shiver down anybody's spine, is the way that they're going to be tracking. And, the people say, oh, don't worry, the government doesn't track us.
Huh.
Brian, I received a thank you card yesterday for getting my vaccine.
Oh,
now, this
my.
Was addressed to me, and I had just moved apartments 2 months ago, to my new apartment, saying, thank you for getting vaccinated. Tell your friends. I'm thinking, how do they know?
Who sent that to you?
This was D.C., the city of D.C. So, yes, they are keeping track. Government keeps track. This is what they do. They
that
collect
is frightening.
Information. This is why they spend so much money. The IRS collects information. Department of Health and Human Services. Now the Department of Transportation with this vehicle mileage tax. They want to collect this information, and they want to use it for whatever purpose they think they need to use it for.
Well, clearly right now with the push towards mandating vaccinations, the backhanded way in which they're creating a vaccine mandate by calling upon private and independent businesses to refuse service to anybody who is unvaccinated. Gee, Dave, I've been asking this question now for weeks and weeks. How in the hell can you prove one way or another whether somebody's been vaccinated or not? There's no, widely distributed card that one size fits all. I mean, they were talking about Lollapalooza the other day. Mayor Lightfoot let them go ahead with that. 400,000 people, they were barely checking the COVID certificates that people were carrying. And a lot of people observed if you just had a piece of card stock with anything written on it said COVID, they let that pass as a vaccine proof. So it's crazy. But
and Brian, please tell me you saw Mayor Bowser, the mayor of Washington, D.C., who instituted the indoor mask mandate for Saturday at 5 a.m. And just so happens that Saturday morning at 2 a.m., she was partying with Dave Chappelle just hours before her mask mandate went into effect. And then later on Saturday, after the mandate, she officiated a wedding with no mask.
Yeah.
So, again, you know.
Rules for thee and not for me.
Exactly.
And real quick, Dave, before we part company, I just have to throw this out there because I woke up to, obviously I go to bed early since I get up before 3. So I woke up to the extension of the eviction moratorium when the White House had previously said it had no legal authority to do so. The CDC itself said it had scoured the laws and it said had no legal authority to do it. The Supreme Court put it and allowed it to stand until the 31st of this or of July, but pointed out that it cannot be extended. You need the legislative branch to create some legal authority by which the CDC can even stop the moratorium. So the Supreme Court's already chimed in on this. And what do they do? They extended the eviction moratorium based on Delta. It's the Delta variant, Dave. Run for the hills.
It's incredible, the overreach of
lawlessness.
The government. And the way that Biden is weaponizing this government against us. And listen, I get it. Eviction moratorium is very popular. It sounds good. But, you know, what about, you know, this person that happens to be a landlord that maybe has one property that he's renting out? So he can't pay his mortgage now.
Right. No, I had a conversation with an organization yesterday that represents exactly the type of landlord you're talking about. The guy's name's Charles Tassel. He's the COO of the organization. Real nice guy, but that's the kind of point he's making. You know, these aren't all big conglomerates and real estate investment trusts that own these rental properties. They're the mom and pop people in the neighborhood. Maybe they have a couple buildings with 4 units each. You know, there's not a whole tremendous amount of money that they're living on coming out of these places.
And their income has been gone. I mean,
devastating.
Their income is completely gone. So we have to look at the, you know, how this affects everybody, not just one segment of society.
I just thought of something, Dave.
What's that?
Do you think, because the rent is building up, this is not wiped away, the moratorium only delays the payment. So somebody's going to be building up, you know, pick a number, $1,000 a month for rent that they haven't been paying now. It's coming up on a year. There's $12,000 you're going to owe. That may bankrupt someone. Right? So if they're bankrupt, then the landlord is only going to get pennies on the dollar, if anything, in the bankruptcy proceeding of what's left for the in the bankruptcy case. It sounds to me like they're never going to get their money. And how far is the $47 billion in rental assistance going to go?
Well, and I think pennies on the dollar is generous. I think some of these folks won't get anything.
I'm with you.
So it's, again,
Dave,
the government needs to stay out of the economy and allow the economy to do what it does best, and that's just live and breathe on its own.
Well, Dave, always enjoy our conversation. I appreciate what you do each and every day. ProtectingTaxpayers.org is the website for the Taxpayer Protection Alliance, where you'll find Dave and his crew hard at work. I thanks for what you're doing, Dave, and thanks for talking with my listeners and me today. I look forward to our next discussion.
Thanks, Brian.
Stay well, my friend. 7:30 right now, 55KRC, the Talk Station. It is 7:33, coming up at 7:34, 55KRC, the Talk Station. Used extra time up with Dave Williams. That's okay, though. Good man, Dave. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phone. I have time for maybe one or two local stories. The one that really disturbed me this morning, Mount Adams is where it happened. This guy shows up at the front door of this house and suggested he was targeting. The occupants of the house saw him on the Ring doorbell thing, the camera. And they noted that he was, you know, struggling with the front door. He was jimmying it. So he went away. But then a little bit later, the homeowner said they saw this guy outside the house again, and that's when the power went out. Ultimately determined that he was in the side yard in the bushes and that that's where the terminal point was for the box that allowed him to shut the power off, and they assumed that he was trying to disable their security. The problem that I found with the story is the homeowners called the police on this guy. It took them 45 minutes to make it over to the house. And according to the reporting from, I think it's Fox 19. I want to give credit. Anyway, Amber Jaff did the reporting. Apologies to Amber, but there you got credit. but it took 45 minutes because of traffic due to the FCC match. Now, that means you know which direction the officer was coming from, but that means there were no other available officers on the scene. This was a guy that was endeavoring to break into a home and had shut off the power in the home and was in the area of the home when they made the phone call to the police officer. I mean, this is basically an active burglary taking place. 45 minutes. And I'm not, you know, dissing the Cincinnati Police Department. I guess maybe they don't have enough officers right now. Maybe the numbers are down. But in the final analysis, it's a plea from me to you to point out that we do have a Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. And sometimes when the when seconds count, the police are, well, maybe 45 minutes away. Be prepared. 736 55 KRC, the talk station. And call your wellness center and schedule yourself a free testosterone test. Guys, check your hormone levels with your wellness center's free offer. And if you want an answer to perhaps why you are, well, have chronic fatigue, osteoporosis, joint pain, decreased sex drive, ED, mood swings, depression, anxiety, weight gain, muscle mass loss for no apparent reason, inability to lose weight, poor sleep, lack of energy. Any of this sound familiar? Yeah, those are symptoms of andropause. They may be symptoms of something else, but a free testosterone screening is at least going to provide you an answer to the question. Yeah, 7:40 right now. Happy Wednesday. My name's Brian Thomas. You have tuned in to the 55 KRC Morning Show. My executive producer is named Joe Strecker. He's a good guy. Without Joe, the show don't go, as we always know. Ron Wilson here on the gardening program on the weekend says that all the time, and he is accurate on that. Let's see here. This is just weird. And I feel terrible. I mean, I'm doing these commercials for Lindner Center of Hope and talking about mental health challenges people are facing, and clearly that is a problem. And you kind of wonder what's going on with the Washington police and those folks responding to the Capitol attack. We have a total of four officers that were there during the Capitol attack who have now died by suicide. And at least in terms of percentage of the population and everything, it just seems to be like a very, very large number. I guess most recently, Officer Gunther Hashida was found dead on July 29th, and the Metropolitan Police Department said earlier this week. Officer Kyle DeFreitag found dead July 10th. According to the spokesperson for the department, unable to determine that the officers' deaths are linked to the January 6th events, and I think it would be rather bold of them to say that they are. But that's just strange right there. If you're struggling with that, please get in touch with someone who can help. Strongly encourage it. Federal judge, this one's going to blow your mind. We have a little problem at the border. For those who have been paying attention, they're just flooding the southern border. All the resources are being used to basically bring folks into the interior. Now, Greg Abbott, the Texas governor, issued an executive order previously that banned transporting these illegal immigrants within the state. And it banned transporting anyone within the state other than law enforcement. Well, a federal judge yesterday blocked that executive order. Judge Kathleen Cardone in El Paso, U.S. District Judge, granting the Justice Department's request for a restraining order against that ban, saying the department was likely to prevail in arguments that the Texas ban unconstitutionally interfered with federal government's operations and conflicted with U.S. immigration law. Now, I kind of viewed this executive order as, it's like aiding and abetting. If someone has entered the country illegally, and I know this isn't perceived as an ongoing crime, the illegal component happens when you cross the border, and thereafter, you're subject to deportation, but you're not considered actively engaging in a crime or anything. But the way I viewed the order, out of a measure of desperation, he's trying to prevent people like, I guess, humanitarian agencies that quite often bring buses up and load the illegal immigrants on them and then cart them off to places unknown. I don't know. But they said the Judge Cardone, and in fact, a Bush appointee, for those who think this is political, at least the Bush judge went the way of the Justice Department, said the Texas ban also was causing irreparable harm to the federal government, quote, and to individuals the United States is charged with protecting, jeopardizing the health and safety of non-citizens in federal custody, risking the safety of federal law enforcement personnel and their families, and exacerbating the spread of COVID-19. That's a quote from the order. What Governor Abbott's executive order banning the transportation is exacerbating the spread of COVID-19? His order preventing the transportation of these people within the state is jeopardizing the health and safety of non-citizens in federal custody? They're in federal custody. What the hell are they doing out roaming about and getting rides from people who aren't in law enforcement? I don't know. It raises a lot of questions from my mind, but here you go. One more time. And if they can stop this executive order on the basis, at least in part, of the concern over COVID-19, doesn't that really want to make you ask the question on why they aren't testing everyone who's coming across the border and being introduced into the interior of our country? By all reports, nobody's getting a nasal swab, nobody's getting tested for COVID or anything else for that matter, and a lot of people coming across the border that appear to be, based upon their outward symptoms, very ill. Where's the concern for the citizens of the United States as it relates to this pandemic? You are supposed to mask up. You are not allowed to go in businesses without your mask or your vaccine proof. You are not allowed to go to University of Cincinnati and be indoors without a mask, vaccinated or not. And yet, on our southern border, arriving from countries that have an extraordinarily and sometimes single-digit vaccine rate, are thousands and thousands of migrants that are not being checked, are not being restrained, are not being sent back, are being allowed into the interior of our country, bringing with them, on a certain percentage level, not only COVID, but a truckload of other possible diseases, along with fentanyl and then the money that it's generating for the cartels. We have layer upon layer of problems. The biggest Charlie Foxtrot of the Biden administration is unfolding right now, and Texas is being handcuffed and prevented from protecting its own citizenry. That's nobody. Frightening stuff. Gavin, you'll be first out of the gate when I get back. It's 7:46 right now. I'm going to mention odor exit, which, depending upon which aspect of that last story you're thinking of, actually could solve a problem. I imagine migrant detention centers that are six times capacity may have an air about them. And if you find that air offensive in any level, on an odor level, odor exit to the rescue. Works on all kinds of stuff. Mold, mildew, anything a human being can produce by way of odor. Same thing goes for any living. $7.50 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. Councilwoman Betsy Sunderman coming up. She's got a real good idea. The pocket veto apparently exists in downtown Cincinnati, and she's got an idea about how to take it away. We'll talk to her about that, as well as the closure of the St. Lawrence Bakery. And in the meantime, talking about, vaccines, vaccine papers, and why are we all being handcuffed and told what to do and what not to do. And, of course, I mean, if you look, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio just came out the other day, and he said we're going to do a vaccine passport for everything. The key to NYC pass. And if you don't have that, you're not going to be able to go to restaurants. You can't go to work out of the gym, et cetera. And got a bit of a problem on his hands. Telling you what you can and can't do. Clearly, he said, it's time for people to see vaccination as literally necessary to living a good and full and healthy life. That'd be Dr. Mayor Bill de Blasio. Only 55% of the city's residents are vaccinated. And he's going to have a problem with his black population. 31% of the black population in New York City is fully vaccinated. Compare that to 71% for Asian Americans and 42% for Hispanics and 46% of whites. So that's racist then. He is trying to keep black people out of businesses, Joe. Where are the cries? This is statistics right here. Isn't that what we determine? Equity, right? Just look at the numbers, not the logic, rational reason, that kind of thing. That's the way it's going. Hold on, Gavin. I'll get Dave here. Dave, real quick. Hey, welcome to the program, Dave. I didn't mean real quick to you, but sorry.
Yeah.
Happy Wednesday.
How's it Yeah, how's it going?
Well, I'm having a difficult time dealing with the country I found myself living in with these crazies who are in charge. Beyond that, Dave, I'm doing great. I hope you can say the same.
Yeah, I'm thinking we need to create a flow chart, but somehow that flow chart always ends with you get screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because as I understand it, you can, based on what you've just been discussing this morning, you can enter the country illegally without a mask or proof of vaccination.
Yep.
You can be transported, and I'm assuming vehicles that probably aren't the best, most well-ventilated and probably not the most socially distanced. You can be illegally transported across the state of Texas. But when I go to a business trip in New York City, I better bring my vaccination papers and wear a mask, or I am in violation and I am an evil criminal of the state.
Exactly.
Do I get this right?
Yeah, Dave, you summed it up perfectly, my friend. Thank you very much for stating the obvious. And, of course, along with the obvious comes perplexed looks of, are you serious? This is what's going on in our United States of America? The answer is, yeah, that's it. Look who's in charge, though, Dave, and remember who to blame when we get to vote again, right? Thanks, man. Stay well. I'm going to get to Gavin now. Hey, Gavin, thanks for holding, man. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Brian. What this administration is doing is committing biological warfare on the United States populace, and they're doing it on purpose because they have to keep the Wuhan flu going the next election cycle so they can stuff the ballot boxes once again.
Yeah, I believe you're right.
That's what this is all about.
Gavin, I think you're right. That's this whole Delta variant. Now, I'll use as an illustration just what they did yesterday to support your conclusions. The moratorium on collecting rent, very popular with people who are paying rent, although they have to see that they're just accruing a bill. But CDC had previously said we have no basis to extend it. The White House itself had said we had no basis to extend it. What do they rely on in order to, well, try to extend it, which they did yesterday? I know it's going to be thrown out in court, but they relied on the Delta variant. And they said, well, in areas where you've got, you know, the larger amount of cases, the, you know, this sort of leveling, this tiering system. So if you're in an orange and red county, then the moratorium, because of the Delta variant, can stay in place. But if you're not out there, well, then of course you can start collecting rent. So they've tailored it to fit the circumstances. It's not defined in a length of time. It's defined by the number of cases within any given area. So that's their workaround. Now, it's still unconstitutional. It'll still be challenged in courts, but it's going to buy them time till they can start handing out the $47 billion in rental assistance that came about during the prior multi-million trillion-dollar bill that they passed. Mm-hmm. Yep, this is the country we live in. Gavin, thanks. Appreciate the call. We following all this at home? I keep saying I woke up in a parallel universe. 755, 55 KRC, the talk station. Please remember this well. In a blink of an eye, it'll be November of next year. Now, I know that seems like a long, long time away, but let's face it, folks. Summer's already almost over. School's getting ready to start in a couple of weeks. And did this year fly by for you as quickly as it did for me? Right. November 22 is about an hour away. 755, coming up. Councilwoman Betsy Sunderman sounds like she's got a great idea. We'll see what you think. And Judge Napolitano, yep, he's on 8:30. Freedom in the coming time of madness. Great op-ed piece by the judge. We'll talk about that at 8:30. Hope you can stick around.
As you head out to enjoy summer, you'll need to pack a few things. But your favorite news and talk fits on your phone already with the iHeartRadio app at 55KRC.com.
Yeah, it's 8:05. Call number 806 at 55KRC, the talk station. Beautiful morning out there and a very happy Wednesday to you. Made even happier. I'm always pleased to welcome to the 55KRC Morning Show to talk about matters relating to the city. Councilwoman Betsy Sunderman, happy Wednesday to you, Betsy. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be back.
And it's one. Look at this, bipartisan ideas on Cincinnati City Council. You and Chris Silbach see eye to eye on something. This is fantastic.
Yeah. What do you think of that?
I like the idea. I really do. And we're talking about this this proposal that she and Chris Silbach worked out to get rid of what they describe as the pocket veto. Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, tell my listeners what the story is currently, because there seems to be, and I'm really wildly curious to know if there's any opposition to what you've proposed. So let's talk about what you're proposing and the reasons for the proposal, Betsy.
So there's something called a pocket veto, and the city charter says that the mayor is in charge of putting things on the agenda for votes. So the mayor has to take a motion that I file and send it to the proper committee for discussion. And then after that, when the committee chair is finished with it, then they send it back to the mayor. And the mayor then has another opportunity to put it on the council agenda. We have city council today, so that's always on Wednesdays. And then we vote on something on a Wednesday. But there's nothing in the charter saying what is the time frame that they have to send it to the committee, or that they have to send it from the committee back to council for
sure.
a full vote. So I've never seen this happen with Cranley, but I did see it happen with Mayor Mallory, where he would just kind of sit on something for a year and not put it in front of anyone because he didn't like it. So I don't know who our mayor will be next year. So I want to nip this in the bud.
Yeah.
So that no mayor next year can do this.
Okay. Makes perfect sense. Obviously, it's bipartisan. You on the R side, Chris Subach on the D side. How about Mayor Cranley? Does he have a reaction to this proposal?
No, I mean, I haven't talked to him about
okay.
it. I know he didn't leave it into the committee. I did contact his office and say, hey, can you skip the part where it has to go to council first and just put it straight into committee, because we're on kind of summer recess right now.
Yeah.
And we have a deadline to meet to get it on the ballot. So he did agree to put a bunch of budget items into the budget committee and skipping the first step where it goes on the council agenda, then to a committee. So he did do that, but he did not decide to put my charter amendment on quickly.
Okay.
But he has the right to do that. That's fine.
All right. Now, I just noted from the reporting in the Biz Journal that Paula Boggs-Muthing, the former city solicitor, as well as John Cranley, have claimed that the pocket veto does not exist. Apparently, there's a 2015 opinion out there that Muthing wrote that the mayor must refer ordinances in a reasonable amount of time, but the period has never been defined and the concept never been tested in courts, which, okay, they're saying that he can't do that. You already know that it's happened before, so I can't see why there would be any opposition to, you know, clearing the air and definitively stating the time within which it must be referred over, or at least giving council the option to force it back.
Right. And Cranley does do it, I think, in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
I've never seen him sit on something for weeks or months or a year, so this is not an attack on him. But I have seen Mayor Mallory do this, where at the end of his term, he just flooded the last meeting with all of the things he was sitting on. So I guess that was a reasonable amount of time to him. So, yeah, so we need to codify this. So my proposal is that there be a two-meeting time limit between it going from the council agenda to a committee.
Yeah.
So two meetings. So in the summer, that could be 2 months.
Right.
But in general practice, it would just be a couple of weeks. And then once the committee's finished with it, then in 3 meetings, it has to get back on the council agenda.
Fair
so
enough.
I'm not making an unreasonable request that it has to be done in 3 days or something. I mean,
no.
It can still be 5 meetings apart, but we need to have some kind of rules.
Right. Now, there hasn't been a debate on this proposal yet, Betsy, or has there?
No, because it hasn't gotten to the committee
right.
yet.
Okay. That's just want to make sure. But you and Chris Seelbach were able to agree on it. How does that work? And I don't want to get into the weeds on this, but I know we have the open meetings ordinance. How is it that you and Chris Seelbach were able to come to some agreement on this proposal, which seems very reasonable?
So I wrote the entire thing. I worked with the law department. And after I had it completely finished, then I sat there and said, okay, who can I get from across the aisle to co-sign this with me so it doesn't look like a Republican thing? Because this really is a nonpartisan thing.
Sure.
And I know that Chris, years ago, tried to get this exact charter amendment on the ballot. So he was the obvious choice. So I called him. I said, hey, do you want to co-sponsor this? And I mean, within 2 seconds, he said, yes.
Good.
So, okay. I mean, that was it.
All right.
So, no, we never sat down and had long discussions about it. I wrote it. I asked him to co-sponsor. He said, yes. Boom. Done.
All right. That's fair enough. And again, I can't see why, how anybody could argue against it. It just, it clarifies something that seems to me the solicitor's office has already sort of agreed that there isn't a pocket veto. But again, in practice, Betsy knows better. All right. Let us talk about the St. Lawrence Bakery.
Oh, wait, let me also say that the city solicitor works for the city manager,
yeah,
who works for the mayor. So when Mayor Mallory was the mayor, his city solicitor said that he wasn't doing anything wrong. So the city solicitor...
We all know what opinions
That's
are
right.
like, Betsy.
Yes, exactly. So whoever's the mayor is going to have a lot of influence on, yes, what the city solicitor, how they interpret that. So anyway, go ahead.
Not shocking at all. Betsy, I know you wanted to at least talk about it briefly, but the St. Lawrence Bakery in East Price Hill closing yesterday. We got word that it was closed after 120 years. Obviously, a lot of Facebook posts, hearts broken. Oh, my God, I've been going there forever, and I drive across town to go there. It's a shame. It's a shame. And today, Brianna Rice from the Enquirer reporting on this. It sounds like this electric issue that they claimed was responsible for closing it was maybe just the straw that broke the camel's back. It sounds like the owners were pretty close to retirement anyway, and this may have been just what pushed them over.
Yeah, of course, everyone panicked. I mean, that's up the street for me, a few blocks away.
Yeah.
So, but right now, our CDC in East Price Hill is redoing a whole block on Warsaw Avenue, and we're going to have all these cool historic buildings now that we can either sell or rent for restaurants, bars, shops, whatever. So I thought that's the obvious location. So I contacted the CDC, our Community Development Corporation, and they said, oh, my God, we'd love to have St. Lawrence. So then I called the owners of St. Lawrence, and I'm sure their phones were blowing up. So I left a message, and I said, hey, we have a location for you. You can just move down the street 3 blocks. And then I got a nice message back from one of the owners, and he said, you know what? We were going to retire soon anyway. It just seems like a lot of work having to move. We're just not up for it. So...
Okay.
Yeah, I think they're probably retiring a year earlier than they wanted to, and it's probably not worth it to them moving just to be in operation for a year.
All right, and that's fine. That's a business decision. It's their life. It's their business. And I suppose if it was there is something to say about the name St. Lawrence Bakery,
exactly,
where it go up to
as a lawyer,
it's the goodwill,
thinking,
right?
Yeah, as a lawyer, I'm thinking they should be out there selling,
yeah,
the bakery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
By the goodwill. Clearly, they built up a lot of goodwill over the years with their operation, St. Lawrence Bakery. Well, we're all sad to see them go, but certainly understand, given the circumstances, why they might decide to do that. Someone out there is probably making another phone call to the owners to suggest just that. Betsy, anything else going on that my listeners need to know about before we part company today?
I'm filing a fun motion today I think you'll like, but I'm not telling you what it is.
Oh, tease. You tease me. When are we going to find out?
I'll text it to you when I file it. I'm going to file it this afternoon. You'll love it.
All right. I'm looking forward to talking with you about it, Betsy. Betsy Sunderman, thank you so much for the time you spent with my listeners and me today, and for the very common sense motion that your proposal, rather, that you and Chris Seelbach are co-sponsoring. Yeah, let's just solidify that to resolve any outstanding potential questions. Betsy, thank you very much, and I look forward to having you on again real soon.
Okay, see you soon. Bye-bye.
8:15 right now, 55KRC. It's 8:19 right now. Hope you're having a very happy Wednesday. Brian Thomas here. Glad to be. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on your AT&T phones. Thing that hit me most this morning was just the eviction ban is back. I cannot, well, I guess I can believe it, but it defies common sense, logic, reason. It defies the law. It is, well, smacks the law right in the face with a sucker punch. This new eviction moratorium, and it comes on the heels of that conversation I had yesterday with Charles Tassel of the the landlord organization. They were happy to finally be getting the spigot turned back on and getting some rent after such a long time. And these are not all really, really wealthy landowners that can afford, you know, well, can afford to live without the money. Do they still have tax obligations and obligations to pay the bills? Absolutely. A lot of people have rent that is connected and has electric and gas rolled into it. If you're not getting that either, got to keep the electric and the gas on. Otherwise, you are creating an environment that's not habitable or habitable for your tenants. You can get into trouble for that. So how is it that the Biden administration could even issue a new eviction moratorium after the White House officials just got done saying, it's almost as if the words just left their mouth, they don't have the legal authority to extend it? Centers for Disease Control, which is the one that issued the original moratorium, or they had authority from Congress on that, though, but went ahead and extended it multiple times, last expiration July 31st. It was in front of the Supreme Court on that argument. Justice Kavanaugh let the thing stay in place, but pointing out that it's going to end really soon. July 31st is like 3 weeks away. So rather than go ahead and just say it's unconstitutional and end it right now, we're going to say you can keep it in place till July 31st under the circumstances, which create political expedience to violate the Constitution. But after that, it's over, and you're going to have to get the legislative branch to do something about it. Well, I know this is a rhetorical question. Has the legislative branch acted on extending the eviction moratorium? If you're not paying attention at home, the answer to that question is no. That's why members of the Democrat Party, the ones on the left that have been camped out on the Capitol in opposition to the reality that rent is going to start to be collected, the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wing of the Democrat Party were screaming at Nancy Pelosi, "Woman, you didn't do anything. You didn't bring forth a piece of legislation extending the moratorium." They're mad at her. They're mad at the Biden administration. That's why the Biden administration came out. I was like, what the hell are you pointing your finger at me for? I don't have the legal authority. Look, I'm the executive branch. If, you know, right now we're going to rely on the Constitution, and we here at the White House, those speaking the words that President Biden ultimately repeats, we here at the Biden White House don't have any authority, legal authority. We don't write the laws. I know it seems like we do in these times of executive orders, but I'm sorry. Back to the CDC, which said they scoured the laws and the rules. They couldn't come up with any authority. But then magically yesterday, they came up with the authority. Welcome to the Delta variant exception to the contract clauses, the property rights, all of those privileges and protections you enjoy thanks to the United States Constitution standing in the way of the federal government from interfering with them. Guess what? Guess you don't have those rights and privileges anymore. Because, of course, the Delta spread. So what you got now is a fake reality. The players in this game, the White House and others in the CDC, they know damn well that what this additional extension is not going to pass legal muster. What they bought themselves is a short window of time before some U.S. district court judge slaps an injunction on them because they don't have the legal authority to extend this moratorium anyway. So that's going to happen. They know it. That's all that "we don't have the authority" stuff that they were just talking about. So they know this is not going to make it, but it buys them enough time because, you know, the wheels of justice have been very slowly. We've talked about this many, many times. From the filing of a lawsuit to the ultimate resolution can oftentimes take years and years. But in a case like this, it's going to be dealt with motion practice. But you file the case, the opposing counsel has, you know, a certain number of days, weeks to answer or otherwise plead. They end up filing their motion to dismiss, and it goes on like that. So weeks can go by, unless the court expedites it. Now, the moratorium the CDC put in place for collecting rents only applies in areas that are considered like hot zones. So that's the little detour the CDC took. Unlike the blanket moratorium, which said until July 31st, 2021, landlords cannot collect rent, this is tailored now. Thanks to Delta, the Delta exclusion to the Constitution. Thanks to Delta, it's hotspot areas. So if you're in one of these hotspots, and as long as that exists, you can't collect rent. It's been pointed out that 80% of the country would fall under this particular moratorium. So got to have to let the courts work it out. But this is what they're lawless. They are absolutely lawless. And it's funny on a twisted level because the Democrats are always the ones calling the Trump the evil dictator and the fascist. I've seen recently some medical doctors want to make criticizing Dr. Fauci a federal crime. Now, clearly, medical doctors don't have any grasp of the Constitution, the First Amendment, but, you know. But within the article, they also referred to Trump as along the lines of a Lenin and a Stalin, as well as a fascist. And I'm like, clearly, they don't understand politics. But here's the Democrats accusing constantly of Trump fascism, fascism, fascism. And what do we have here? Joe Biden, not much of a fascist in terms of the polarizing popular figurehead whose face you see everywhere and who's almost a godlike figure, but dictatorial powers? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Judge Napolitano on freedom, believe it or not. Coming up next, First Union Bank. Suzette Lozekamp, that's who you want to talk to at Union Bank. She is an absolutely fantastic lady. You're going to really enjoy speaking with her. And the reason you want to speak with her is because of mortgage. She's got more than 30 years in financing, helping folks with mortgages, and so she knows them backwards and forwards. She happens to be licensed in every single state. And so that means wherever you're hearing my voice, you can count on Suzette Lozekamp to help with your issues. Your issues may be if it's a good idea to refinance. Maybe you might want to tap some of the equity since your home is worth more than it was, say, a year ago. That's almost a given. If you're paying PMI still, refinancing yourself, getting your home reappraised, that might get you out under the thumb from under the thumb of PMI. So there's a lot of reasons to call her, and I recommend you do that. If you're a first-time buyer and you haven't gotten a pre-approval letter, she is the one to call and, of course, ultimately work with when it comes to your mortgage. Never a junk fee, never an application fee, just great rates at a low cost and the best customer service in the business. Please give her my regards. Suzette's number is 859-331-9444. That's 859. 859- It's 8:30 right now, 55 Care City Talk Station. Hey, Joe, would you go back and make sure he's still taking his medication? Getting worried about Chuck. Brian Thomas here, always pleased to talk to Judge Anna Napolitano, the voice of common sense, logic, reason, and defender of the Constitution, as will be proven to you when you read his op-ed column, which comes out tonight, Freedom in the Coming Time of Madness. Welcome back, Your Honor. Always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, Brian. I can't stop chuckling. He is a pip. I didn't even know about the cat, but I'll take the 13 runs.
Yeah, definitely. Lucky 13. I hope the cat was black. That would actually make his comments a little bit more sensible, but... Anyhow, oh, I just got done talking about the lawlessness. I am beside myself in disbelief, Your Honor, and I think this dovetails quite nicely into your column and the point you wanted to make today. Up until yesterday, the White House and the CDC and everyone, including the Supreme Court, had said the CDC does not have the authority to extend the eviction moratorium. It didn't have the authority in the first place, but we're going to let it stay in place till July 31st. But after that, that's it. Congress is going to have to act. The White House said they lacked the legal authority to extend the moratorium. The CDC itself said it lacked the legal authority to extend the moratorium.
And guess what they did?
They extended the moratorium. It's the Delta variant exception to the Constitution, Your Honor.
Oh, I forgot about that.
You didn't remember reading that?
I forgot that Madison put that in there.
The Delta variant exception.
Yeah, so, Brian, it is always relevant to talk about violations of the Constitution, because the government violates the Constitution every day.
Yes,
but the way you presented this is not only hilarious, it's profound and terrible, because it shows that the government doesn't give a damn about upholding the Constitution. It has taken an oath. Everybody that works for the government takes the same oath. I took that oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. They just make up their own rules as they go along. I don't want to see people evicted, but when you sign a lease, you agree that if you don't pay the rent, they can kick you out. The CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, Georgia, an administrative agency of the federal government, has nothing, capital N, nothing whatsoever to do with rents and evictions in the United States.
Right.
That's not me. That's the Supreme Court of the United States.
I'm just beside myself with laughter on this, but it should be feeling like a pain, a stabbing in my heart. I mean, when is this lawlessness going to end? And you know damn well, Your Honor, and I'm sorry to interject a curse word in there, but you know damn well they know this is illegal. They know that it's going to be in front of a U.S. District Court judge as soon as someone tees it up, based upon what the Supreme Court already said. The only thing they're doing is buying some time so they can get the word out that, oh, gee, the American taxpayers have teed up $47 billion in rental assistance from that last monstrosity they passed. Nobody's bothered to tap into it yet.
So this is behavior which should trigger the federal government paying the legal fees of the people who have to challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Because the government knows darn well what the Supreme Court wrote just a month or so ago, and they know the CDC doesn't have this authority. My guess is this is the Biden administration trying to say to renters, look, we went the extra mile for you. But they're giving them a false sense of security.
Yep.
And they're forcing landlords to pay money that they shouldn't be forced to pay. So when you and I rejoice that the federal government is being forced to pay somebody's legal fees because the federal government's behavior was frivolous,
you and me,
the government's not paying those
I
legal
know.
Fees. The taxpayers are paying those legal fees.
I was waiting to make that point because you know it. I know it. That's like suing your school district for some offense, civil rights or other. You're just suing your neighbor for the money. That's where it comes
Correct.
From. So, yeah.
Correct.
But anyway, the argument that the CDC made this time is, and it is in fact truly a Delta variant argument. It's that no, this isn't an extension of the moratorium for a time certain. You know, and we're not going to say this lasts until September 30th or whatever. It applies to those areas that qualify as like hotspots, according to the CDC. So it's not going to be a blanket. Although what I've read is that 80% of the country would qualify under the CDC's determination as being eligible for this abatement of rent.
They don't care. They just want to make themselves look good, and then they'll blame the failure of this on some black-robed, unelected, life-tenured judge appointed by Donald Trump or whatever nonsense they want to argue. Look, we have dark days coming. Brian, you were kind enough to mention my column. These lockdowns and mask mandates are, in my view, within weeks of being reimposed, and the public is just in no mood to go through this again.
Nope.
We already know that the government is without authority to regulate our private behavior, to regulate our behavior on private property, and to shutter businesses as they did a year and a half ago. If this happens a second time, you're going to see massive, massive peaceful resistance.
Yes, you
far
will.
More resistance than the government has the manpower to enforce.
Well, and you
regulate.
There's justification for that. There is legal justification to resist this because, as you point out, and again, you do such a great job summarizing this stuff in your op-eds, the Contracts Clause of the Constitution prohibits states from interfering with lawful contracts. They've done that in a blanket fashion with this rent moratorium. Leases,
correct.
Employment agreements, the Due Process Clause, writes Judge Napolitano, of the 14th Amendment prohibits the states from interfering with life, liberty, or property without a trial at which the state must prove fault. Ah,
fault.
A burden
How
of proof.
Can prove fault?
I know.
For me not wearing a mask or standing too close to somebody or bellying up to a bar.
And the takings clause, of course. I talked with the chief operating officer of an organization that is it's a trade organization that represents small landlords. He was on the program yesterday, and we talked about the end of the moratorium, and he had all kinds of stories. The mom and pop renter. This isn't like some real estate investment trust that can do without the rents. The fact that the taxes remain due and the electricity must continue to run, and all these have to be paid without the benefit of the income that might really be the sole support for a lot of these owners.
The federal government has no authority to interfere in the relationship between landlord and tenant. Real estate law is all local and state law. If a state wants to impose a moratorium, it has to be finite, and it has to recognize the existence of the obligation. It can't wipe away that obligation. The states, of course, can't pay the rent in behalf of the tenant because the states are broke. The federal government's broke, but it can print cash.
And that's how we end up with...
So, Brian, we're about to see all of this all over again unless saner heads prevail. That's the point of my op-ed that you were kind enough to mention.
Indeed, and I encourage my listeners to look for it this evening, Freedom in the Coming Time of Madness. Judge Andrew Napolitano, always a pleasure, voice of reason, always great to have you on the show, and I'll look forward to further discussions, my friend.
All the best to you. Thank you.
And to you. It's 8:38 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. Gives me time to tell you the phone lines are open, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, hit #550 on AT&T phones, and for me to mention Cullen Electric. Cullen Electric. Proud once to again be the Light the Fuse sponsor for the Western and Southern WEBN Fireworks. Celebrate it. Cullen is offering a discount. It's a huge discount to you. So if you've been putting off the service and panel upgrade, whether above ground or overhead, and you want to do something up to and including 400 amp in terms of an upgrade, guess what? Cullen Electric is knocking 25% off that service upgrade. Panels and breakers have a lifetime warranty, and Cullen, everything Cullen does for you, even if it's not this particular job, comes with a 10-year warranty. Okay, it's electric. It's Cullen. Think that, and you're done with having to concern yourself with which electrician to call. Homeowners, it's Cullen Electric, Cincinnati.com. Remember, 25% discount on the service.